House will come to order. We're at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of resolving into committee of the whole, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're now on committee of the whole. Representative Campbell.
Good afternoon. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 216. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 216, as introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to crimes and offenses, creating a felony for possessing a deadly weapon in a courtroom, providing specific authority to a presiding judge to determine who may carry a weapon in a courtroom as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 216, Deadly Weapons in a Courtroom, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, and Crone. Those who voted no, Representatives Miller, Walters, Watt, one excuse, that's Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation to House Bill 216 do pass, and I'll turn over the explanation of the bill to the good Majority Floor Leader. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment, but we'll hold off on that until after he's explained the bill.
Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill makes one addition, adds a definition, and makes one addition to existing statute. Existing statute 65209 says that it's, except with, as authorized by the person in charge, it's a felony, 10 years in the penitentiary and $10,000 fine or both, maximum, to take or pass a deadly weapon into a jail, a state penal institution, the Wyoming Boys School, Wyoming Girls School, a correctional facility operated by a private entity, or the state hospital. This bill makes one simple change. I tried to keep this simple. I've had all kinds of invitations to broaden this. I'm not going to do it because I just want to protect just the courtroom. And so this makes a simple change in adding a courtroom to that list of institutions. And then I got to looking in the statute, thinking naturally that a courtroom was defined someplace, and it's not defined anywhere in the statute. So that's the origin of the language at lines 1 and 2 on page 2 that defines a courtroom as a room in which a judge presides over a court of law. I had a question whether that would apply to municipal courts. I think it would. That's a judge and he's presiding over a court of law. So I think a municipal courtroom is covered as well as a circuit courtroom, a district courtroom, and the Supreme Courtroom. It surprises me that we've never had this explicit statutory authority, but we don't, and I want to make it clear just as to courtrooms and nothing else. So that's the essence of the bill, Madam Chairman, and I'd stand for questions.
There are no questions, so all right. Representative Simlock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, this seemed like a great idea, and certainly what we're trying to do here is good. But my question is, you know, it's kind of that age-old discussion we have about restricting gun use is to make absolutely sure that it's a level playing floor, that we prohibit it. But how do we really know that there that other people who are not ready to follow the rule of law would not find a way you know, to get a gun into a courtroom. And I would be, you know, if this was in companionship with the provisions that said that, you know, they had to be had to go through security, and maybe it's assumed that there is security in all of our courtrooms, but that'd be my concern. So if a good sponsor could address that, I'd appreciate it.
Majority floor leader.
Madam Chairman, I think it's safe to say a courtroom is one of the most highly regulated spaces that we'll find anywhere in government. And there is the additional provision that appears on lines 20 through 22 on page 2. Nothing in this section shall preclude a presiding judge from carrying a weapon or determining who may carry a weapon in the courtroom. And in every instance that I can think of, the presiding judge is going to have a bailiff or some other individual there for the purpose of keeping order. And I've seen our judge in a particularly contentious matter. I've seen him call down to the sheriff's office and ask for a couple of extra deputies to come up. They're going to be armed. He can authorize that. He can carry a weapon himself. And so I think there's adequate safeguard. I think if you're going to deprive or threaten this serious penalty toward someone who's carrying a gun, then I think the one that does the depriving assumes the burden for the safety of the space, and I think that the judge has all the tools he needs to be able to do that.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a concern about our small towns that use our city halls, for example, and they're one room in most cases. That could be classified as a courtroom in which a judge sits. I would be okay with it as long as that only applied while a judge was sitting, but that room may be used for something else. That would be my concern.
Majority floor leader.
Well, Madam Chairman, all I can say in response to that is when the judge is in there, he ought to be able to control the court. He or she ought to be able to control the courtroom, and ought to be able to act as a traffic cop about who can have a weapon in there and who can't. And if there's some dual use room someplace, and the judge is conducting court, nonetheless, the contentiousness of things that go on in the courtroom, even traffic tickets, sometimes it's amazing. You think this place is amazing. You ought to go down to the court and see the things that people get excited about. And so it just needs to be regulated.
Chairman Teeters?
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman. I don't think the majority floor leader is tracking me. So is that room a courtroom all the time? Because the way the bill is written right now, it says in which a judge presides. And I don't know if that means is currently presiding or... That's my concern. I don't have a problem restricting the use of guns inside City Hall while there's a judge sitting over municipal court. But if somebody accidentally walks into City Hall to pay their utility bill and they're carrying a gun, I don't want them to get a $10,000 fine.
Chairman Zoniker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question kind of piggybacked up on that one. Does that mean if you carry it into the courthouse and you haven't got to the courtroom to get approval? But secondly, in the larger cities, we have two or three judge or courtrooms that might be going on at one time. And I guess I would like some clarification if it's any one judge in any court. There could be some confusion there as one judge may not want this particular person to have a firearm. And in a courtroom right next to him, there may be a judge that has no problem. Thank you.
Majority floor leader.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think that's for the judges to work out amongst themselves. And I think whoever the judges that's presiding is the judge that's making the rule about who can carry a weapon and for that matter, whether he or she carries a weapon themselves. And going back to that other question, I don't know. We could bring a second reading amendment if we had to. I suppose you could maybe give a dual meaning to this sentence. I would say it's a courtroom when a judge is presiding. And when a judge isn't presiding, it's not a courtroom. That's the way we intended to write it. And if that's not clear, I'd be amenable to a second reading amendment to make that more clear.
Representative Crowther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just also wanted to kind of piggyback on the answer that was asked by the good chairman, and that it only applies to the actual courtroom. It doesn't apply to the entire courthouse. So if you were in the courthouse outside of the actual room where the court is taking place, it doesn't apply. So it would only apply on the specific courtroom that you're walking in. So if there are three courtrooms in one building, each one could set its own rules because it only applies to that actual room, not the hallway or anything outside the courtrooms.
Are we ready for the... We are on the committee of the whole, amendment number one. Chairman Gingrey.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. I move committee of the whole amendment number one. What this does, and first of all, this is a really good bill. It's something that's needed. And let me just state that here's what's happening across the state in a few different courthouses. Because the legislature has not spoken on this issue, it's just silent. Some judges have interpreted that to mean that they have the inherent power to just simply ban guns on their own. The problem with that is some of the judges are going beyond their courtroom. They're saying, well, because my courtroom is in the courthouse or in this particular building, I can ban guns over this entire building. And in some counties, that actually may work. In other counties, your courthouse actually has multi-functions. First floor might be, paying your title and registration and that type of stuff. And that's what sort of drove this, that do we want the judges to write the law or should we write the law? And so that's what this bill's trying to resolve, that we write the law, that we make the determination as to how this would go. So it's a really good bill. The only thing the amendment does, and we talked about this a little bit in committee, and we didn't follow up on it in committee, and then afterwards the co-sponsor of this, him and I had a little discussion about it and decided to bring this committee the whole amendment. Not really falling on my sword over the amendment or anything. If the amendment doesn't pass, I still like the bill a lot. But here's what the amendment does. If you look at the present language, it makes it a 10-year felony with $10,000. What this amendment does is turns it into a one-year $5,000 misdemeanor. So a little bit lesser of a penalty. And I think there is a distinction. If you're bringing a gun into the state penitentiary, that's probably a 10-year felony. You're intending to break someone out of the pen. There can be, because it can get a little confusing sometimes with courthouses and whatnot, I wasn't sure if we need to go all the way to a felony. And the other thing the bill does two things. It does that, and the second thing it does is if you actually look at what the present bill is saying is, if that person takes or passes a deadly weapon, and so then you go back and you read deadly weapon, the definition, and deadly weapon actually reads firearm, explosive or incendiary material, motorized vehicle. I'm not sure you're going to bring the motorized vehicle into the courthouse, but an animal. You could actually stick an animal, I guess, on someone. Or other device, instrument, material, or substance, which in the manner it is used or is intended to be used, is reasonably capable of producing death or serious bodily injury. There was some discussion that that definition may go too far. So what the bill also does, besides moving it from what the amendment does, moves it from a felony to a misdemeanor, but it also takes out deadly weapon and says a firearm, explosive, or a device or instrument which in the manner it is used or is intended to be used is reasonably capable of producing death or serious bodily injury. The device part would be like a knife, something like that, something that you could hurt someone with. And so that was the amendment, and we thought we'd just offer it up. How it fits in there, A would still be there for those other things, the jail, the state penal institution, boys' school, girls' school, state hospital. Then we create a new subsection B, and subsection B would be this one, a misdemeanor for carrying a gun into a courtroom. So that was the amendment.
Question being called?
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, I would ask you to resist this amendment. And to me, it comes down to this. It's a felony to take or pass a deadly weapon into a jail, state penal institution, boys' school, girls' school, correctional facility, or a state hospital. Well, the courtroom is the place where people are placed in those institutions. And I just I think that the penalty for bringing a deadly weapon into the courtroom where people are sentenced to those institutions ought to be on parity with the penalty for taking a deadly weapon into those institutions. And I further submit that I don't think the deadly weapon definition is too broad. And those are all deadly weapons. And I don't know why we're going to pick winners and losers in terms of which ones are in the courtroom. So I would ask you to vote no on the amendment.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the amendment. You know, I think a courtroom is a little bit different than some of these other places. Courtroom is where people are there from all walks of life. Innocent people, victims, they're there in the courtroom. Frankly, emotions can get out of control. And frankly, there's definitions. I asked for a definition of deadly weapon when we reviewed this bill in committee. And there's the possibility that someone's bodily fluids used improperly could be considered a deadly weapon. So if someone were to do an action against the perpetrator of the crime, whether it's murder or some sexual crime, if some family member were to do something to the perpetrator of that crime, they could be prosecuted with a felony. That's why this amendment was brought, so that couldn't happen.
Majority floor leader.
Well, Madam Chairman, we've had incidents like that have occurred in courtrooms, and there was one almost exactly like the last speaker described that occurred in Denver. And I don't think those are done by accident or inadvertently. It's true that courtrooms are full of passion and emotion. I would submit more passion and emotion on a daily basis than you see in some of these other institutions. And if it's good enough for these other institutions, it ought to be good enough where the heat of the battle and the passion and the conflict occurs over whether someone's going to be committed to one of these institutions or not. So I continue to ask you to vote against the amendment.
Representative Larson.
Madam Chairman, I stand in opposition to the amendment. Just I thought it was a good idea until the good chairman said that it included pocket knives, and I'd be guilty of a misdemeanor every time I went into a courtroom. I think if the amendment was firearm or explosive and left out the other language, it would be more palatable, so I'd stand up in opposition to this amendment.
All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The amendment fails. Pursuant to H.R. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 216 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. Pursuant to H.R. 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand.
House bill. Are those opposed, please stand. Oh, wait. 49. House Bill 216 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 103. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 103, as presented by Representative Yeagy, an act relating to firearms, providing that the state of Wyoming preempts the entire field of firearm and ammunition regulation, providing civil liability as specified, providing for attorney's fees and damages, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 103, Regulation of Firearms, State Preemption, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. Those who voted no, Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 103 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'll just explain the Standing Committee Amendment real quick. If you just look over on page 2, it reads, no city, town, county, political subdivision, and this is the important part, or any other entity shall, and then it goes on to say stuff. There was some confusion as to, is any other entity just any entity in the state? And it was obvious it was intended to be a governmental entity. So we just stuck the word governmental in front of the word entity. And then we put in a new subsection M that says nothing in this section shall be construed to affect private property rights. So that's the Standing Committee Amendment. Unless there's any questions, I'd ask you to vote aye on that.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll turn over the explanation of the bill to the good representative from District 19.
Representative Yeagy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Glad to be able to be here today and bring another one of these things that I always bring every year. Since I've been here, a real defender of our Constitution, our Second Amendment rights. I do own quite a few of these so-called firearms, both pistols and rifles. I do have enjoyed using them for sport and for hunting, and taught my kids and grandkids the same. I've brought quite a few bills to protect our Constitution, our Second Amendment rights, and I'm worried at this time in our history with the world events, the events going on in the United States, and I'm just here to protect and preserve the rights and liberties that we have. I have a little clipping that I picked out, or I got, of a famous court case that took place in the Windy City where our president's from. And our good senator, who's a doctor, let me just read what he said. No level of government should take the right, or should have the right, to take away our individual Second Amendment rights. Our other senator says, in this ruling, whether you live in this in the city we are in or the Windy City, any other place in the United States, you're allowed to protect yourself. So this is the reason I'm bringing House Bill 103, and it's entitled Preservation of Firearms, State Preemption. And I kind of think a good way to look at it would be preserving our rights. Why are we doing this? Because we're protecting the rights that we're supposed to already have. They just seem to keep getting encroached on little bit by little bit. We've had several places and some judges that have moved to take away our citizens' rights that we're supposed to have. So this bill, with a lot of thought, a lot of people's inputs, groups, attorneys, legal advice, is well thought out and drafted to protect the rights of our citizens. 44 states have enacted similar legislation to ensure the uniform firearm laws throughout Wyoming and guarantee the equal rights for all people. This is the purpose of this bill. And if you look at the title, it says providing the state of Wyoming preempts or protects the entire field of firearms and ammunition regulation. That's a pretty big deal, and I think our co-chair alluded to that yesterday. And then to guarantee this, we are providing some civil liabilities as specified. So this bill is trying to say we have our rights, and people shouldn't be taking the rights of we as citizens away with their judgment and well-intended wishes. And there's another amendment, and I would like and one of the co-sponsors to finish up this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. What this amendment does, and this was raised in committee, and we weren't real sure about what the issue the person was bringing up was, and so after the committee meeting, I went and did some research to figure out what they were alluding to. The issue was, what this bill is saying is that the state has preemption over the possession of the firearm, and that makes a lot of sense, because what you don't want is a hodgepodge across the state. For example, I always forget when I come into this city that you can't have a cell phone, and so you don't want everybody having a different firearm law as you travel across the state. So that's state preemption. That's the concept, that all firearm laws will originate out of this body here. However, some municipalities, and I would actually, I'm guessing here, but I bet you almost all municipalities have some type of ordinance on the books restricting the discharge of a firearm within the town limits. And then quite a few counties, those counties that have land development regulations. So if your county doesn't have land development, maybe you don't have this. But those counties that do, some of them have placed on their subdivision regulations that you don't discharge within a subdivision. And that makes some sense. That the testimony the gentleman gave yesterday was that he lives, I think he said, in Sublette County, and he lives in an area that has a high migration area for pronghorn, and the county requires that no discharge of firearms within the subdivision to keep people from hunting within there. I think that's how he was explaining it. So what this did was just to address his concern that those towns and counties that are regulating the discharge of firearms, this would still allow for it. It doesn't restrict, if you look in the bill, you still can have shooting ranges, and those, the towns and counties, still regulate. So unless there's any questions, I'd ask for your aye vote.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. Is there any discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, a question on page 3, line 21. The district court shall. Is it typically a shall versus a may when they award reasonable attorney fees? Is that the custom and practice?
I think we lost Chairman Gingrey. Oh, no, there he is. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure on that, and maybe we can look at that, and before a second reading, we could bring an amendment. It's a good point, and I'll research that.
Are you ready for the question?
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a question for the chairman, I guess. On the bottom of page 4, a person who may legally possess a firearm and is adversely affected by an ordinance, rule, or regulation promulgated or enforced by the city, town, or county. Now, how about, does that preclude them from enforcing rules or procedures for council meetings or commissioner meetings or what? I guess what I'm saying, would this law, if this bill is adopted, does that take away their right to monitor what people carry into the official government meetings?
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I can answer both of those questions. The question just asked, the answer is yes. It makes the laws for what goes on in government meetings and city councils, it makes them uniform across the state. So we would be the body who would set the rules there. And again, I think piggybacking a little bit on the analogy of forgetting that you can't talk on your cell phone when you come into the capital city and, you know, possibly setting yourself up for an accidental ticket there. The principle is the same, but the consequences are very different. If you're talking on your cell phone when you drive into a city where it's not allowed, the consequence there is something, you know, akin to a speeding ticket that doesn't really, you know, might hurt your pocketbook and sting for a little bit, but it doesn't really ruin your life. Whereas the consequences for an honest mistake on walking into some place because it's allowed everywhere in the state except for one city, suddenly you've broken the law. Well, now you've committed a gun crime, and we're talking about a felony and jail time and everything else. So I think that speaks to the importance of having all the laws consistent across the state when it comes to firearms. The other question, as far as the shall versus may, if you look at page 4, on page 3 it says he shall award reasonable fees, et cetera, on page 4 it says only if the plaintiff wins the suit. So, I mean, it only applies if the person bringing charges wins. That's why it's a shall. It's not left to the discretion of the judge. It's only if he wins the case. So I hope those answer the questions, and I would ask for your favorable consideration on the bill.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Number 1, please say aye. Opposed? No. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to support to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number, House Bill 103, do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 103 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 104. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 104, introduced by Representative Croker, an act relating to firearms, providing that any federal law which attempts to ban a semi-automatic firearm or to limit the size of a magazine of a firearm or other limitations on firearms in this state shall be unenforceable in Wyoming, providing a penalty and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 104, Firearm Protection Act, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. One no vote, Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 104 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And just to explain that real quick, on page 1, line 14, we have no public servant. And then we removed out or dealer selling any firearms. So the dealer got removed. And then we had to, our grammar we had to fix. We moved the in this state. We moved it up so it was attached to something. And then in two spots we added where there was a long laundry list of, it said act, order, law, statute, rule, regulation. We added an executive order. And then on the last page, on page 3, both on line 7 and on line 11 down there, we added in that remains exclusively within the borders of Wyoming. And unless there's any questions, I'd ask for your aye vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. No. We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. Chairman Gingrey.
Madam Chairman, before we actually get to that amendment, let me turn it over to the good representative from District 35 to explain the bill, and then later on we'll come back to the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I give you House Bill 104, the Firearm Protection Act. This is updating a law that this body passed a few years ago that dealt with firearms that were manufactured in the state of Wyoming not being subject to federal regulations, and it updates it by adding the words owned in addition to only manufactured. And then most of the meat of the bill is on page 3. It also adds a clause that says any federal law, rule, regulation, or order created or effective on or after January 1st, 2013 shall be unenforceable within the borders of Wyoming if the law, rule, regulation, or order attempts to ban or restrict ownership of a semi-automatic firearm or any magazine of a firearm that remains exclusively within Wyoming. And number 2 requires any firearm, magazine, or other firearm accessory to be registered in any manner. And again, that same clause was added with the amendment, clarifying that it has to remain exclusively within the borders of Wyoming. There has been a lot of talk in the news, obviously, about potential gun bans, and I think it's pretty clear. We have a Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. It says shall not be infringed. We all take an oath to uphold the Constitution. The Commerce Clause of the Constitution gives the federal government the ability to regulate things that are involved in interstate commerce, and that is why the scope of this bill is narrowly defined only to firearms that remain exclusively within the boundaries of Wyoming. Because of that, I believe that there is no federal authority in the Constitution to give the federal government the ability to ban such weapons or place restrictions upon them. In the several years that this existing law has been on the books, it has never been challenged by the federal government, so they haven't challenged our authority to do so, and I believe that we do have the right to continue to do so. I also believe that it puts us in a position, because it's only talking about future restrictions that might be passed. It's our way of defining what we believe our rights are and what we believe, where we believe that line is. And obviously there's no way to know exactly what will happen if there is a challenge to this, but it does give us instant standing to have our case heard, and it would actually be the federal government that would be violating our laws, and it would be clear that they were overstepping their authority and stepping on a state law and not the other way around. So it is clearly a different case from trying to nullify something that's already in existence. That's the meat of the bill. I guess I will stand for any questions.
We're on the Committee of the Whole, Amendment number 1. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole. Oh. Excuse me. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. And just to point out, it's a corrected copy, so find that one. And what the Committee of the Whole Amendment does is over on page 2, if you look at lines 13 through 17, it just puts the language back to what it was. So it takes it from a felony back to a misdemeanor. And I'm in support of this bill. However, I think it's important to actually get the bill passed. And in order for this bill to be passed throughout the process, not just to hear, I think it would be more palatable if it was a misdemeanor. And that's how we got through the manufactured bill 2 years ago, was by switching it back to a misdemeanor. That made it much more palatable during the process. So that's what the amendment does. It changes it from felony to misdemeanor. And before we got to that, before we vote on that, let me or take questions on it. Let me sort of walk through a little bit on nullification and charging federal officers with crimes. There's actually a pretty famous case. It's called In re Nagel. I won't go through the whole story. It's a fascinating story, though. The Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court was getting divorced from his wife. They were in a big fight between each other. A guy named Fielding was a U.S. Supreme Court justice at that time. They did circuit riding. Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of California gets on a train. The bodyguard for the U.S. Supreme Court justice thought the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the California was going to shoot the U.S. Supreme Court justice. So a guy named Nagel, who was the bodyguard, shot the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court and killed him. And then California charged Nagel, it's what set the precedent for what happens when you charge a federal official, and here a federal officer, and in that case he was charged with murder in California. And from that, a lot of the case laws come. And actually, Wyoming is actually pretty famous because we're the ones who have been setting the case law. There's a pretty famous case that came out of Park County. Two wolf biologists were in a helicopter. They were landing on private ranch land and collaring wolves. The Park County attorney charged them with trespassing against those federal officials. And that case actually went all the way to the Tenth Circuit, and actually the state of Wyoming asked for cert to the U.S. Supreme Court but was denied. But it went quite a ways, and it's a pretty interesting case if you ever read it, as to what the federal courts think about Wyoming charging federal officials. And you can do it. What you have to understand is under federal law, the minute you charge a federal official, it actually leaves state court. So none of these would ever be done in state court. They are immediately removed from state court, and they go to the federal district court here in Cheyenne, and a federal judge presides over the case. So you can still charge a federal official. That's actually permissible. The case, however, is handled by a federal court. And that way, and the reason, you can sort of see why they're doing that. They're making sure that the emotion of maybe the locale is removed from the issue, and it's removed to the federal court. And then the federal court hears the case as to did they or did they not violate the law. As to nullification, I mean, this is, you know, most, there's a few of you that are history buffs, so you know, we have a long history of nullification in this nation. And probably the most famous case is Wisconsin, with they passed the Fugitive Slave Act that said if you find a fugitive slave, you must return that slave to the southern states. And Wisconsin said, we're not going to follow that law. We don't care that the federal government passed a law that said that when we find a slave, we're not going to return them. And that's one of the more famous cases. And then more recently, with marijuana, in particularly in Colorado, there's a federal law that you can't actually smoke marijuana. Colorado has said, we don't care about the federal law. We're going to go ahead and do it. And the federal government has decided to just let it go. And you know, whether or not they would let this go, I don't know. But the current administration has shown that they're not going to get into these battles with states, and they clearly have not enforced. They've decided not to enforce federal law in those states that have done that. But as to the amendment itself, I would just ask you to vote aye. It just changes it back from a felony back down to a misdemeanor.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. As far as the amendment is concerned, I would add that I do believe that this offense is worthy of a felony, but I do agree that the chairman has made some good points, so I will respect the will of the body, whichever direction you decide to go on that one.
Chairman Lockhart.
Madam Chairman, for my clarity, we're on the Committee of the Whole Amendment?
Yes. number one. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. We're now on the second committee of the whole amendment, number two. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We can dispatch of this one very quickly. I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number two to House Bill 104. This is just some cleanup language in the title. I was approached by LSO this morning, and they just handed me this and said this fixes the language and makes the bill cleaner, so I trusted their opinion. That's all it does. It doesn't change anything in the bill. If there are no questions, I would call for the question.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number two, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. Is there any other question on the bill?
Madam Chairman.
Representative Throne.
Madam Chairman, I just have to respectfully supplement the history lesson of the good chairman of judiciary, which I will do quickly. Certainly, early in our founding days, nullification was an issue, and perhaps even supported by the founding writers of our key documents. However, you will recall in the 1860s, we had that episode known as the Civil War. So that's where nullification led, was to the Civil War, sort of indirectly, I'm paraphrasing. After the Civil War, of course, we had the 14th Amendment, and then we had the adoption of the Wyoming Constitution, which in Article 1, Section 37, reminds us all that we are an inseparable part of the federal union. The Colorado situation is a referendum, not a legislative initiative. Also, that certainly hasn't been litigated. The federal government has just decided not to enforce the federal law. So it's a different situation. But I think clearly from our history, and certainly during the Civil Rights Movement, when the Southern segregationist states attempted to ignore the federal law and practice nullification, that wasn't exactly a bright, shining moment in our history. Certainly, if we want to make a statement, we can do it, but let's not pretend that it's consistent with the Constitution, because it's not.
Is there any other discussion on the Representative Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm slow on the trigger, so allow me to go back to the Standing Committee Amendment number one that we passed earlier, because I had a question that I didn't get asked in time. On page one, line four, it says, after delete in and insert the remaining exclusively within and after Wyoming insert. My question is this. How can you determine whether, going back to, I guess, page one, and look where that insertion is, stays within Wyoming? It just strikes me as something that, how do you do that? And I'd like maybe the sponsor of the bill or someone else to explain that, please.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Where we got that language was, if you recall 2 years ago when we did the bill on manufacturing, we put that language in. So in this bill, we were trying to make sure that same language is there. And the reason for that is, we're trying to put lots of belts and suspenders on this bill so it actually can pass challenge. And one way of doing that is if you say that the firearm remains within the state of Wyoming, then there's the argument that could be made that interstate commerce does not apply, and thus the federal government actually has no control over that firearm since it never entered into interstate commerce. Now, how you would prove that or disprove it is just like any other case. If the person testified, well, actually, I purchased, where did you purchase the gun? Well, I purchased it in another state. or I've, you know, transported that gun multiple times across state lines, then possibly you've entered into interstate commerce. So we were just trying to make it very tight that, particularly that the federal government would not have, because they can only, their law can only apply if the product is in interstate commerce. So what we're arguing is that it is not in interstate commerce.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 104 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Division being called, all those in favor say stand. Forty-nine ayes. House Bill 104 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 105. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 105, introduced by Representative Yeagy, an act relating to concealed weapons, creating a Citizens and Students Self-Defense Act, removing restriction on the carrying of concealed weapons in certain areas as specified, providing for the carrying of concealed weapons by permit holders as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 105, Citizens and Students Self-Defense Act, respectfully reports the same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. One no vote, Representative Connolly, and is signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 105 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'll hold off on explaining the Standing Committee Amendment until the good sponsor from Representative 19, from District 19, has explained the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Stand again before you. This time it's something a little near and dear to my heart, talking about schools. And being a former school teacher, 36 years, I think I know a little bit about what goes on there. And in the last few years of my teaching, and just some of the scary things that are going on, we locked front doors and asked everybody to come to the front door, and if you go to the back door, you couldn't get in unless somebody was going out, and then you could get in. But because of all the things that are going on, I just worry about kids and their safety, safety of our schools. Right now they are a gun-free zone, and some of the horrific accidents and things that have happened just make me wonder. And I thought about this, again, with a lot of advice, come up with this bill. Last year, you remember, as we were talking about concealed carry without a permit, a lot of you got up and said, we really can't have concealed carry without some type of permit. So they wanted the concealed carry permit to be on before you could carry concealed. The argument was, if you've had a background check, you've been fingerprinted, you've shown some competency in handling a gun, that's what was needed for somebody to carry concealed. Well, we voted that in anyway, but this time I'm bringing that same argument with carrying in schools. If you've had all the checking that you need, why not be able to carry inside a school? Most of the horrific accidents that we've heard about have happened in gun-free zones, and the bad guys really don't care what the laws are. I'm a law-abiding guy, and if that's the law, I won't carry where I'm not supposed to carry. But the bad guys don't have that thought. They just want to do whatever they want to do. So I bring you House Bill 105, and hopefully this is the idea that we are going to provide a safer place. The name of it is Citizens and Students, and you notice it says students on there because in the bill it's referring to colleges. So if you look at the title, Removing Restriction on Carrying a Concealed Weapon in Certain Areas and Providing Where You Can Carry, if you want to look at, down the bottom of page one, we are creating a new section, 68105. And if you'll turn over the page, it just says the exceptions that we're giving if you have gone through all the checks that you need to have. The amendment that the good chair is going to bring is going to change a little bit. So at this point, I will turn it over to the good chair to explain. As we went through this in judiciary, there were a few changes, and so I'll just turn it over to him.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I believe I already moved the standing committee amendment. I'll walk you through what we did, and it's actually quite a few changes, so I'll try to go slow here. First thing we did, we try to avoid giving things titles, so we got rid of line 15 and 16 on page 1 that gave it a name. So that's pretty simple. On the second page, both on line 9 and on line 12, we stuck in the word public. We had some testimony from some people that have private institutions, and the way it was worded, it was almost seeming as though they would have to do this too, so we stuck in the words public on both. We also deleted out lines 7 and lines 13 and 14. There was some confusion as to why those were there. They were taken from another statute and brought over, and they probably shouldn't have been brought over to there. So we deleted that out. And then the big change we made is on line 4 on page 2, we took out the word concealed weapon and we put in the word firearm. And I'll try to explain to you why we did that. Remember, we sort of talked about this yesterday. You have three different groupings. You got your open carry, you got your concealed carry with a permit, and then you have your constitutional carry, meaning you don't have a permit, but we've allowed you, we didn't allow you, we recognized it in the Constitution that you can carry a concealed weapon without a permit. And we did that last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember. So there's sort of three different groupings. Technically speaking, on the face of the law, we have no law against a gun coming into a school at this time. What we have on the books is, with the exception of boys' school and the girls' school, those are in that 10-year felony that we talked about earlier today. But for any regular public elementary or secondary school or college or university or professional athletic event, which are the three we're talking about here, we actually have no law that says you can't open carry into those places. What we do have on the books is that you cannot bring a concealed weapon into those places. So what this bill was doing was saying that you could not, that you could now bring a concealed weapon. What we wanted to clarify was that, because then there was going to be some confusion, will that mean you only can concealed carry into a school but you can't open carry? So what that amendment does by putting the word firearm there, it says you can do either into a school. That was the intent. And if you may ask, I thought there was a federal law, school safety act and all that.
the federal law actually has an exception, and it says if your state has a provision that allows permit holders, then they may go into schools. So even though I said open carry would go in, you'd have to have a permit. So nobody can do this. Nobody can go into any of these schools. Nobody can go on these colleges or these athletic events without having a permit. So you just can't open carry. You'll be allowed to open carry, but you'd have to have the permit. I think that's the whole amendment. Yep.
Representative Yagi? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Question being called, all those in favor of...
Madam Chair?
Excuse me, Representative Paxton.
Madam Chairwoman, as a former school principal, I have some serious concerns about the elementary and secondary school provision in this bill. I certainly don't want to get into a situation where we're creating a killing field inside of a school, but I think with this bill it gives an opportunity for many, many different things that could happen that could endanger kids. I can see a scenario whereby a kid can get a hold of one of these firearms inadvertently because a teacher who has a concealed carry permit forgets to lock a drawer, leaves a gun in some place, and a child can pick that up. So I have some real concerns about not providing some opportunity for the people who control the school, the administrators, to have some say in exactly how those guns come into the school and how they're controlled. So the way the bill is proposed right now, I would have to oppose the bill.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A few days ago, the sheriffs and police chiefs were in town. And I had a conversation with our local sheriff about this bill. And that was a very interesting conversation we had. And we talked about a couple things. And here's something that I want this body to understand, that those people are trained professionals. They carry guns all the time. And they're required to repeatedly go through training on shooting over and over and over again to a proficiency level. They are also required to go through training on incident management over and over again until they are proficient. I'm bothered by the language that suggests that you have some sort of expertise or some sort of, you know, understanding on how to shoot a gun, and you're able to carry this into a grade school or a high school or a public event. I just thought I'd throw that out there for all of you to think about in the process of this. I really don't like the bill, but we've already made up our minds, so this is kind of an exercise in, I guess, government. Thank you.
Chairman Gendry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wanted to go over some of the testimony we heard in committee. And one of the ones I thought was most interesting is dealing with college students, that presently some of our colleges do not allow firearms anywhere on the university grounds. And this would now allow, and let me make it clear, only people that are actual permit holders would be allowed to do this. That means you've gone and shown, you demonstrated your familiarity with a firearm, either through a completion of a training course. You've done, and there's actually a list of different things you can do to get certified. So those are the only people, and then athletic events. Now, if someone wants to bring a second reading amendment, we can have a discussion just on the issue of elementary and secondary schools. You know, maybe that's something we need to have a discussion. But the two I think are really important to get through this on this is the colleges and the athletic events. And let me just give an explanation of why, and I don't like using personal stories, but I'll just use one real quick. Years ago, I was prosecuting a case. A man did not like how I was prosecuting a case, and he brought a gun to my office and held me hostage. He ended up going to prison for a very long time for what he did. I had no way of protecting myself. And as soon as after that incident occurred, the chief of police came and said, "Keith, you need to own a gun." And we went and bought a gun together, and he showed me, you know, everything I needed to know about it. And I started carrying that gun everywhere. And the man who ended up going to prison had buddies, and anyway, it's a long story. I was always a little on the edge. I carried that gun wherever I went. Here's where it gets confusing in the state of Wyoming. Because of this law that has all these restrictions on where I can go, you're constantly removing the gun and putting it away and not going into certain facilities because you can't go in there with a gun. Most of the places I would go are the places that I was going to probably run into somebody that wanted to do me harm. So the idea that the gun was for self-defense was somewhat defeated by the idea that I could not carry the gun into those facilities. In particularly, what I'm thinking of is I used to go to basketball games a lot, and so I'd go to the basketball game. Clearly, at the basketball game, I could not take the firearm in. If we're thinking that firearms are for self-defense, then you need to be able to go into places with the firearm. We can't just keep taking the firearm out, putting it away. Oh, that, now I'm going here. Now I can wear the firearm. At some point, you've defeated the whole purpose of self-defense. I certainly understand the concerns with Romanet 2, the elementary and secondary schools, and maybe that's something we can have a debate on second reading. But I think it's really important, the athletic events and the college and universities, in particular, I guess it was an email, not testimony. A young lady was explaining that on the university, she has concerns about her safety, and she went into a story, but she cannot carry a firearm to protect herself because of the university. This bill would help that, and so I'd urge you to vote aye.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last year, I appreciate the comments of a good representative here that is very worried about schools, but last year we had this same discussion, if you'll remember, about if we allowed everybody to carry concealed without a permit, our crime rate, our incidents would go up. Guess what, folks? It's gone down. It hasn't really done what a lot of us sitting here were thinking it's going to do. I will point out there's four states that already have this. The state to the south of us, the Big Beehive, have a son that teaches there. His principal came up to him and said, "Do you have a permit?" "Yep." "Do you carry?" "No." "Would you carry?" I'm thinking the horrific bad things, the worst one that happened, was in an elementary school, folks. And yet, I appreciate the concerns. And I think I hear what you're saying, but my concern is for safety of kids, and I think this bill is for the safety of kids. And I would hope that my principal, when I was teaching, had come to me and discuss this. I think there's some teachers in elementary school that don't want to have anything to do with firearms. But I think there's some that do, and I think, the principal, if I were the principal, I would kind of have a plan with what's going on there. So I do think there's some real benefits, and I do see the concern that was brought up. And if we'd like to discuss this on Second Amendment, that'd be fine. But I'd appreciate your support of this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Paxton.
Well, I hope my comments couldn't be construed as the fact that I didn't want my kids to be safe. It's exactly the opposite. I'm very, very concerned about the safety of all my kids, and as a principal, that's my primary responsibility, is to make sure of that. But if I have no ability whatsoever
to determine who should carry a, who can carry a concealed weapon into my school, and I have no idea who has one. I'm not sure that I can assure the safety of all my kids. I'm more worried about a mishap with someone, you know, forgetting to lock a drawer and a seven-year-old getting a hold of a gun and showing it to his buddies and that thing going off and hurting somebody. There has to be some mechanism, some compromise in this thing to show that we are concerned about getting the guns in the wrong hands, and just having a concealed carry really opens that up a little bit too much for my comfort zone.
Representative Watt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hear comments of I need to know if there's guns coming into my school and who has them. How do you know right now if there's a gun coming into your school or who has it? You don't know. You don't know today, and when this bill passes, you won't know then. So what's the difference here? Someone who wants to bring a gun into a school will do it. And if they want to use it for evil, they will use it for evil. It's that simple. So how about if we let some people that intend to do good carry those guns instead of just all those evil ones?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 105 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Division has been called. All those saying aye, please stand. House Bill 105 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 37. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 37, as introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish, providing for the issuance of licenses through department-authorized raffles, providing for rulemaking, providing that participation in the raffles is not gambling, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 37, Hunting License Raffle, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchins, Yeagie, Crone, and Pieperinen, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Davison?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 37 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments, and I'll turn the explanation of both the bill and the amendment over to my good friend from Bridger Valley.
Representative Yaggy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll go through the bill and then we'll do the amendment right at the end. What we're doing here is trying to raise some money for the game and fish. There's been a lot of concern with their revenues. And this is something that a lot of states are doing that does raise big money. We're talking into $1 million here. And what the purpose of this is if you would like, you can put in for a special permit. And these permits that you put in for our big game, which are antelope, deer, elk, moose, I want to say caribou, but we don't have any, bighorn sheep and goats, and there's even grizzly bears also, when we get to hunt grizzly bears, and we're really hoping we're getting closer to that. But if you'd like, for a fee, you can put in for one of these permits. If you draw the permit, you can hunt that species that you're putting in for anywhere you'd like for the beginning of the season through the end, and it doesn't count against any points you have. So if I'm putting in for a bighorn sheep and I have 12 points and I put in for this special raffle and I draw my bighorn sheep in this raffle, I still don't lose my points, and the next year I could put in for my bighorn sheep again. So this is something that states have done to just generate more money, both with residents and non-residents. And you don't have to wait. That's another thing. If you draw this tag, if you have a moose or a bighorn sheep, you don't have to wait to 5 years. So there's really some incentive to put in. And the states that have done this have raised a big amount of revenue for their game and fish management. So this is the bill that we're just trying to allow people to put in for these special permits in a raffle system. Your chance is just a raffle. And you could put in for any of the eight species that you want, or you can put in for all of them. Your chances are really bad, but you have a chance. And some people just might want to put in to donate, and there's a way that you can get a permit and donate it to a disabled or veteran, whatever. So it's a good, it's just a good way to raise revenue. And I see our chairman back there has a question, so I'll let him answer, and then we'll go to the amendment.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just had a question on this, whether you've got the some pro forma estimates on what you expect the revenue would be generated from it. And, you know, if that's the case, why don't you just raise the fees on licenses in general to accomplish the same thing? It seems like we're putting our game into a lottery or into a lotto, I guess. I mean, we don't gamble with money most often in this state, but now we're starting to gamble with money and big game, and that seems kind of, if not hypocritical, it's just odd to for me to understand why we do this and not just raise licenses. If you need money, you raise licenses, right?
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Question on, well, should we do the amendment first and then discuss the bill?
Madam Chair.
Representative Yagi.
I could sure do that. I will. The amendment has been moved, so I will describe that if it's okay.
Go ahead.
I'd ask your approval on the amendment that will be put in on line 6. The only thing the amendment does is make sure that whoever draws the license is a legal guy. You're not somebody that, if you've had a game violation in one of the states surrounding it, and it's a bad violation, we are reciprocal in denying licenses for different states here. So this amendment makes sure that the person receiving the license is checked and is legal to have that license. So that's the amendment. I appreciate your support on that.
Representative Greer. Oh, thought he was walking to the microphone. You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The Standing Committee Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A question on the bill, page 2, where it describes the number of license. Looking at this, it appears that mountain goat license are included in this raffle, and it appears that you could raffle two of them. I think the last time I checked, they only sold five. And I would have some concerns about raffling off two of those five licenses.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you. Good question. If there's only eight licenses, they will not put in that area. So if it's eight or less licenses for an area, then these two of those are not taken out, if that answers that question.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Question is that in statute somewhere else other than on this bill?
Representative Yagi.
Thank you. That's in rule and regulation that is there, but that's the intent of this, and that's what it says. If they will only take no more than two out for the trophies.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to make sure I'm clear that there is a fee obligated to someone who wants to participate in the raffle. And then on page three, they are also then responsible for paying the cost of the license. Am I understanding this correctly? They have a raffle participation fee, and then additionally, they have the cost of the license that they shall have to pay upon winning the raffle. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
I believe that is the case, and I will double-check that and make sure we're talking right. But you have to put in, I think it's $20 is the fee, and I asked that so I could have that, but they haven't established the amount for resident and non-resident for each one of the big game. But then there's a license on top of that. That is true.
Is there any other discussion of the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Davidson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 73 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed? Excuse me, the House Bill is 37. House Bill 37 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 212. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 212 is introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to cities, towns, and counties creating a program to provide assistance to local governments impacted by energy development as specified, providing authority to the State Loan and Investment Board to issue grants to local governments to address the effects of industrial projects or energy development, providing authority for the Office of the State Lands and Investments to administer the program, granting rulemaking authority, providing definitions, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee, number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 212, Impact Assistance to Local Governments, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Cannaday, Greer, Kasparek, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 212 do pass, and I further move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will explain the Standing Committee Amendment and then turn it over to the sponsor for the explanation of the bill. Standing Committee, during the discussion of the bill, it was determined that there was no need for providing an appropriation. As you can see from the Standing Committee Amendment, we remove providing an appropriation and then deleting the lines that reference the amount of that. So I'd urge your support of the Standing Committee Amendment and call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor, the Standing Committee number 1, say aye. Opposed? No. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
And with that, Madam Chairman, I'd like to turn the explanation over to the great lady and legislator from House District 11.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring you today House Bill 212 and would ask for your favorable consideration. House Bill 212 creates a framework to provide impact assistance to communities affected by oil and gas development. As many of you may know, we have an Industrial Siting Act that has been in place since 1977. And the purpose of the Industrial Siting Act is to get funding to local governments for large projects, power plants, large gas plants. And the theory behind the Industrial Siting Act, which has worked well all these many years, is that oftentimes local governments have the impacts before they have the revenue. And they're really put in a difficult position and suffer hardship as a result. And certainly our friends in the southwestern part of the state have experienced this. And traditionally what this body has done since I've been here is sort of throw impacted counties money after it's done. And this is really not fiscally responsible because in certain cases they might not need the money. In certain cases they might not be getting enough. And so the idea for this bill is a result of something we did 2 years ago that was a little different. 2 years ago, we created a framework to deal with impacts from the Niobrara play just for roads. And we allocated a certain amount of money, I think it was $6 million, for the impacted counties from this part of the state, and it went through a SLID process. And that process seemed to work fairly well. And so what this bill does is it takes a similar framework and creates a framework that can go through the SLID board and they can develop the rules and regulations. As you notice from the Standing Committee Amendment, I took all the money out. So you might ask, why do it now if there's no money? Well, the problem is we're always doing this after the fact. And we know, for example, that one of our major energy companies is considering is in the early stages of developing perhaps a 4,000 well project in the middle part of the state where there's really not much of anything the last time I went through. A lot of sagebrush, a lot of sheep, probably not a lot of infrastructure for a large-scale oil and gas project. And so in committee, it's important for all of you to know I love these bills that kind of turn into love fests. We had support from energy sector, the environmental sector, and the local government sector. So I think because we're in a lull right now in terms of major oil and gas development, that it's a good time to put a framework in place. We can come back in the budget session and see what the needs are, if there are any, by the next time we arrive. But we'll have the framework in place so we can get ahead of the problem so that perhaps other counties that face this oil and gas development will get the same assistance or similar assistance that we've provided for 35 years for the large-scale projects. And I do need to move the Committee of the Whole amendment, if I could, Madam Chairman. And let's just get that cleaned up, and then I'll answer some questions. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. The purpose of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 is to remove a phantom statutory reference that's not needed and was from an earlier version of the bill. And it's really sort of sad when a whole raft of lawyers, including myself, read a bill, and it's the good electrician from the middle of the state who actually finds the mistake. So I would call for the question on the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Just a comment on the Committee of the Whole amendment. I just want it to be clear that sometimes people that have technical backgrounds and engineering backgrounds can read and can pick out mistakes provided by the legal profession.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. Question being called. All those in favor of... There is further discussion on the bill. Representative Waters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question for the bringer of the bill. On page 2 under the definitions, line 14, development means any oil and gas development. Why wind energy and other energy resources that could have the same negative impacts on communities is not included in this development definition?
Representative Throne.
Madam Chairman, the purpose of this bill is to cover what's excluded in the Industrial Siting Act as it relates to oil and gas exploration and production. Large-scale oil and gas plants are covered by the Industrial Siting Act. Wind, if the projects are expensive enough, are covered by the Industrial Siting Act. I guess I would urge everybody, you know, we can add other uncovered, non-covered types of energy development if we'd like. But the original purpose of this bill was oil and gas, because most other, not all, but a lot of other impacts are covered by the Industrial Siting Act.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to ask the sponsor on this, referring to page 8 in the middle of the page, the impact assistance account. When you look at that, it looks like the only way that impact assistance account can be populated with money or replenished with money is from the general fund. And how much would it take to change some language in here so that we could open up the possibility for the business firm itself to participate, let's say, in this, because I think, you know, there's times when they recognize they're public citizens or corporate citizens, and they say, well, yeah, you know, we need to participate in this, and we will. And that's a little bit like the impact or the industrial siting process, but still a little bit different. But I just think it's a little narrow to say that the only way we're going to pump money in this is through the general fund.
Representative Thrum.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would have to check with our staff to find out if a state fund can accept contributions, but in reality, what happened with the Energy Impacted Roads Bill was there were, and SLIB under this bill, I believe, would have this authority. The money we put in this account is probably not going to cover all the costs, and with the Energy Impacted Roads Bill, the energy companies did participate. It's just the money didn't come to the state. They provided substantial matching grants, and as part of the rulemaking process for that program, and I believe it was also in the statute, the communities had to identify other sources of revenue. So we don't create a framework where we give a community more than they need or really more than they're entitled to.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a thought, and maybe the good chair could give me a little bit of background. As we're handing this money out, and I think that for all the reasons that have been stated, good ideas, but I'm just wondering, is there any way to, as we hand the money out to these impacted areas, to say when you get on your feet, the revenue starts coming back, that maybe we could get a percentage of it back so we would create something that we could continue giving other areas as we get into, you know, we're not quite as plush as we used to be? That's just a thought I have.
Representative Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, there's a couple of questions that have been asked, and I'd like to touch on them. Large projects usually come under industrial siting, and on the industrial siting, there's conditions that are provided, including roads and remediation, and if the project goes south, they have to clean it up and have bonds for that. There's a pretty rigorous process, and that's for all major projects. And second, there is a on the advance money on this, the time for the impact getting started comes from making this kind of a area available to development. With that, there comes the project with the revenues that come to the state that feed the places that money comes from, severance taxes and all those kinds of things that come from the project. So it is an idea to get on the project early so that when the impact on the people that have the land there are being touched, you have some money forwarded by the state, and then in the long run, money comes back to the counties and comes back to the people that are impacted by the development. So that's kind of a rambling discussion, but that's how the general concept of this has been argued and won.
Representative Thrum.
I don't have much to add to what the good chairman said. I will say that in industrial siting, the municipalities do not pay back the money they get in advance.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 212 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
House bill 212 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House bill 132. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House bill 132, introduced by Representative Harvey. An act relating to Chiropractic Licensing Act, amending the composition and compensation of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, providing for chiropractic interns and preceptors, providing for temporary licensure as specified, authorizing use of the phrase chiropractic physician by licensees, amending requirements for chiropractic examinations and continuing education, amending acts identified as unlawful when committed by a chiropractor, amending criminal penalties, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, in Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 132, Chiropractor Licensure Amendments, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparic, Larson, and Throne. Those voting no, Representative Wilson, signed by Representative Green, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so the recommendation that House Bill number 132 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
And I ask Chairman Harvey to introduce the bill.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Let's start with the Standing Committee Amendment. On page 1, line 2, it says delete chiropractic and insert chiropractic, and then there's a dash, physician. And then the next line deletes physician. There are several reasons why chiropractors want to be called chiropractic physicians, but we want to make clear that it is a hyphenated word. In fact, further on, we go on to say that it can't be advertised on two lines, on signs, on business cards, and on stationery. And the reason being is that when you drive by a chiropractor's office and you see the word Dr. So-and-so, chiropractic, and then the next line says physician. We don't want anybody, you know, how your eyes play tricks on you and you read chiropractor, then you would think there were two people in the office, and that's not true. A chiropractic physician is someone who has been board certified, has been trained, has the qualifications to be called a chiropractic physician. The courts have upheld, in fact, the Wyoming Supreme Court upheld that they do have that right as well. If you go to page 2 on the amendment on line 17, it says after therapy for purpose of this act Venipuncture means the puncture of the vein for withdrawal of blood. So it's not like they're going to be bloodletting or they're not going to be inserting things. It's for them to do a blood draw for testing purposes. On line 26 of the amendment, which is on page 3, line 9 of the bill, pardon my fingers, they seem to be not working. On page 3, line 9 of the bill, it says, it's talking about the licensure, and it says who have practiced chiropractic continuously in the state of Wyoming for a period of 3 years, who shall have a diploma from a, and it, we changed recognized chiropractic school to an accredited chiropractic school. We are increasing the number of board members from 3 to 5, and so they are going to be able to elect four members of this board are going to be able to be chiropractors, and one is a member at large. They'll elect their chairman and vice chairman, or president and vice chairman. I'm not quite sure how they had that worded. And then we had it in the bill, it had, and the board would also elect a secretary and a treasurer. Before, one person assumed that same role. But the reality is that someone else writes the checks. And so we amended this to say, and the board may appoint a person who is not a member of the board to fulfill the functions of treasurer or secretary. And it's because, you know, we have so many small boards and commissions that they're all served by one or two people, and so they can appoint this person to take notes of the meeting and to pay the bills. Most of the rest of this is the conforming language to bring chiropractic physicians into the hyphenated term. Then it talks about, on the second page of the amendment, line 29 through 36, it just talks about how chiropractic physicians going to appear. And then it changes the licensure date from December 31st to August 31st. And that's just so that it's not all the licenses from all these small boards to do all at the same time. And then on the very last part of that amendment, it's deleting the word venipuncture and inserting the word venipuncture. And that's just conforming language again. The chiropractors haven't opened their Chiropractic Practice Act since the early 90s, but some of this was written in the early 20s. And so some of the other things that we did in this bill is we took away their ability to sign death certificates. It's not that chiropractors do this, but apparently back in the day when the original Chiropractic Act was put into force, they were able to sign those death certificates. So it talks a lot about what the requirements are, how they're going to run this board, how they're going to license people. And rather than bore you with every single detail, I'm just going to stand for questions. If anybody has a question, first of all, let's dispose of the amendment. It's the standing committee number one. If there are no questions, I would call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Questions?
Is there any discussion on the bill?
Oh, Madam Chairman.
Oh, there is a Committee of the Whole amendment.
I'd like to withdraw my Committee of the Whole amendment.
Committee of the Whole amendment number one has been withdrawn. We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion? Representative Waters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a few statements to make about this. I am very much opposed to this bill from beginning to end. But I'd like to start out by talking about, in my view, chiropractors can do some serious harm to their patients as they do back manipulations, particularly vertebral arterial dissections. And basically what that is as they manipulate your back, they tear the blood vessels within your back, and those blood vessels then stop the blood flow to your brain and can lead to a stroke. This happens many times a year in the large hospital, or it's seen, I should say, many times a year in the large hospital in the center of the state. So I'm pretty sure it's seen all over the state. My second concern really has to do with the chiropractor's own creed and the venipuncture. Venipuncture can be used for many purposes, including the withdrawal of blood for therapeutic purposes, testing purposes, diagnosis, administration of blood products, pharmaceuticals, performance of performing diagnostic imaging studies, potentially linked to therapeutic treatment. The official policy of the association involving chiropractors says, and I quote, "Chiropractic is a drug-free, non-surgical science, and as such does not include pharmaceuticals or incisive surgery." So it's unclear to me why chiropractors require the access to people's veins, since they do not believe in pharmaceutical treatment of the body, as evidenced by their own creed, and again from their own association creed. "Doctors of chiropractic have a deep respect for the human body's ability to heal itself without the use of surgery or medication. So I don't see the need for them to draw blood for diagnosis, as this typically leads to other medical needs." Furthermore, and it was already stated by the good chairman, that your eyes will play tricks on you, and you have, moving to the term of chiropractic physician, if you glance at a business card, a business window, or anything else, and it says chiropractic and physician in the same line, same area of that, you're going to believe this person is a physician. And that, to me, leads to patient safety. So, and why does it lead to patient safety? Because of the difference that a physician has in their education over the education of a chiropractor. So, for example, to become a medical doctor, 4 years undergraduate, 4 years medical school, 10,000 plus hours clinical patient care, and 3 to 7 years residency. That's to become a medical doctor. To become a chiropractor, 90 credit hours, which I would add is less than it took for me to get an animal science degree. 4 years chiropractic school, 4,200 instructional hours of combined classroom, laboratory, and clinical experience with no residency requirement. So right there, we have a huge difference in what it takes to become a physician over what it takes to become an actual chiropractor. So as this bill comes to us, I have to ask, what purpose does it serve? Who does it benefit? Well, it benefits the chiropractor at the cost of patient safety, in my view. If a chiropractor wants to be called a physician, they should go to medical school and not go to the legislature to get that title. So I would leave you with, would you want your loved ones to be seen and taken care of by a chiropractor who has the limited education or a doctor who has successfully completed medical school and is called a physician? Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a quick question that I think was probably covered before, but I missed part of the discussion, so I apologize. But I just wanted to clarify, am I understanding this correctly, that every single chiropractor would now be a chiropractor physician and there's not a distinction between the two?
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That is correct. They would be known as a chiropractic physician, and that is as upheld by the Wyoming Supreme Court. Part of that is for billing purposes. But chiropractic physician, first I'd like to address the patient safety. There may be some accidents in chiropractic medicine, and there may be some bad actors. But by doing this, we are strengthening the board. We're allowing them to meet a little more often. We're allowing them to regulate themselves. And if there's someone who continually performs bad chiropractic practices, then there's a duty to report that. As far as the venipuncture is concerned, it is for withdrawal of blood, and it does have many applications, and part of that is to aid in the chiropractic treatment of patients, not medication. It just helps them in doing what they do by knowing exactly what they're treating. It's one of the patient safety issues. As far as the education requirements are concerned, it is accredited. It is to their limitation. They are doing what they are, what they're saying they're doing, and they're not putting themselves out to be a physician. They're putting themselves out to be a chiropractic physician, and that is different. And that's why we hyphenated the word as an amendment, is to keep that straight. But the truth is, we think that they need to be able to bill for what they do, and with the new changes coming down, without that word physician, they won't be able to bill, not like they are now. And I would submit to you that there are thousands of people across the state of Wyoming that are very comfortable using a chiropractor, that use them for treatment all the time. And I don't suspect that anything we do in this body is going to change their actions. I'm just asking that we open this practice act, modernize it, take away their ability to pronounce people dead, help them live up to the full potential of their education.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, just quickly to touch on one thing about consumer safety. In what this act is doing, this act is cleaning up. It's self-policing, self-regulating profession. This bill is helping clean that up, help make that more effective through their board. But you look at page 11 of your bill, and in the statute that already exists, they use the title Doctor of Chiropractic. It's just a change of modernization of the term. We used to call our doctors our doctors. Now we like to call them our physician. That's all. I encourage your support.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also visited with my local chiropractor, and he, representing a lot of the chiropractors around the state, pointed out real benefits of just what we've just heard. So I would just like to reinforce that. And we just heard a real negative thing about some chiropractors, and I would like to do a little checking on that. But I just heard nothing but this is going to improve, so I stand in favor of this.
Is there any further discussion on the question being called? All those in favor of Representative Green's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 132 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 132 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division has been called. All those in favor, please stand. House Bill 132 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 168. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 168 is introduced by Representative Connolly, an act relating to domestic relations, establishing domestic partnerships and related rights and responsibilities, specifying limits on domestic partnerships, requiring certificates, providing for the recognition of foreign domestic partnerships, establishing the presumed legitimacy of children of domestic partnerships, providing for dissolution of domestic partnerships, defining the applicability of other law prohibiting multiple domestic partnerships, providing penalties, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 168, Domestic Partnerships, Rights, and Responsibilities, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Green, Paxton, Petroff, Danswanser. Those who voted no, Representative Gay and Kirkbride, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Speaker Pro Tem Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 168 do pass. And, Madam Chairman, what I'd like to do is go ahead and dispense with the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 168, so I'd like to move that. And, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to explain it just a little bit. The three things that it really does is that it takes out the language that's under 18 and no judicial override, and also entering into a contract if you were under 18. So that's been removed. So if you just go to your bill to page 3, the first part of the amendment starts on line 22, and that has been deleted, which says all domestic partnerships involving a person under 18 years of age are prohibited and voidable unless before entering into a domestic partnership, the judge of a court of record in Wyoming approves the domestic partnership and authorities the county clerk to issue a certificate. Therefore, that has been eliminated. And the second part is on page 5 on line 13. The only part of that sentence on 13 and 14 that remains is either party is a minor, period. And then starting on line 17, there is a period after partnership, and we eliminate if, following through line 18 and 19, ending with 18. So that also has been eliminated. And then the other was just a statute cleanup that was on page 6. On line 23, are there questions? There are questions. Okay, go ahead.
Majority Whip Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have a question on it. As I traced in the amendment, it looked like on page 3, line 20, the line "except as otherwise provided" remained in there, which would indicate that there were still some times where there could be a domestic partnership for those under 18 years of age. And I was wondering if that was an inadvertent omission or if there are, in fact, instances where minors could enter domestic partnerships.
Madam Chairman, that is inadvertent, and we'll have to take care of that with a committee of the whole amendment. I think we missed that in committee. So,
Representative Petroff. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And at this time, I will turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Petroff.
May I read? The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And now I will defer to Representative Petroff to explain House Bill 168.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, at the end of this legislative session, you all and we all will be able to go home and say that Wyoming does not support same-sex marriage. We do not support same-sex marriage. And it doesn't matter if you actually got to place that vote or not. The Corporations Committee spoke for you and spoke for the state when we said that Wyoming does not support same-sex marriage. This is not that. Okay? This is not that. And one of the things that I am most proud of in this body is that we look at a bill for what it is and for what it does, and not for what the catch title says, and not for what we think is in it, and not for what our millions of emails say are in it, but we look at every bill fairly, and I'm confident that we'll do that with this bill. So I'll briefly talk about what the bill does. On page 2, line 20, it talks about the purposes, and it starts, and starting on line 24, to provide adequate procedures for the licensing of domestic partnerships and to provide a method for persons to obtain the rights, responsibilities, protections, and legal benefits provided in Wyoming law for immediate family members. So what it means and what we're doing in the bill is allowing two adults who are mentally competent to enter into a legal contract. Now, this can be the same two adults that are of the same sex, two adults that are of the opposite sex. They can be dear old friends. They can be couples. They can be neighbors with no family. They don't even have to cohabitate. We look at nothing about the relationship, morally or otherwise. We just give them a legal tool. This is not a justification. It's not a sanctification. It's not a ceremony. There's no officiant. We don't use the word union. We don't use the word marriage. We don't mention love. There is no blessing. It is a legal partnership. It's just like the many, many legal business partnerships that we allow people to enter into without judging the content of those partnerships. This contract gives people the same rights, duties, and privileges typically reserved for family and specifically reserved for spouses. They're not referred to as a spouse. They're not called a spouse. They are not a spouse. They simply invoke the same rights, duties, and privileges. Like the ability to inherit property, the ability for a physician to communicate about the condition of a partner in a medical crisis, and the ability to make funeral arrangements. When we were in the committee, I heard for the first time what one of the co-sponsors was thinking when he helped to draft this bill. And it was a senator who had in mind his aunt, who for 28 years has lived with another woman. They have no romantic relationship. They have no sexual relationship. They're heterosexual. And they both lost their spouses due to tragic circumstances. They came together to share living expenses. They came together to share the duties of raising the other woman's child. And this senator, who is the closest living relative to his aunt, finds it amazing that he would be the one making end-of-life decisions, funeral arrangements, and inheriting his aunt's property instead of her best friend of 28 years. Now, these two women aren't going to go to an attorney. They're not going to draw up a bunch of papers and pay a bunch of money to cover the 4,820 situations where spouses invoked in our statutes. Indeed, they couldn't do it. There would be no way to draft a document that would cover all of those situations. But this would give them a way to make themselves family, and it would do it without any connotation of sexuality. It would do it without any connotation of marriage or union. Now, I don't mean to sugarcoat that most of the people who are using this tool would be same-sex couples. And the two questions that I've heard the most about this bill are, is it the first step that will lead to advancing rights for this group of people? And will they be back again looking for same-sex marriage? And to the first question, I would say, this doesn't take any step towards sanctioning any relationship. It's not a first step. It's no step towards sanctifying any relationship or approving of any behavior. This is a blind legal tool that gives a wide variety of people an ability for legal protections, which it is our duty to provide. We're simply acknowledging a changing demographic of all kinds that requires flexible tools to assure these legal protections. And to the second question, I would argue that if this passes, it becomes very difficult to argue for same-sex marriage. Because the biggest argument for same-sex marriage is that there isn't legal protection. And that argument goes away. So with that, Madam Chairman, I will let others comment on the bill.
Representative Paxton.
Madam Chairman,
This is a very, very difficult issue for all of us, I believe. I'm sure that all of us have had some very moments of soul-searching on this particular bill, looked at it from every way you can look at it, as I have, certainly. But after carefully weighing all the pros and cons of the bill, the equity issue is the one that tips the scale for me in favor of the bill. It does not endorse a particular lifestyle, but it does bring equity to a segment of our population. I'd like to point out that if a elderly couple, say a man has lost his wife, a woman has lost her husband, and they decide they want to cohabitate, but because of the Social Security rules, they can't afford to get married. I think that in this particular instance, a civil union may be in order to provide them with maybe some moral and perhaps some legal relief. So on and for the bill.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would submit to you that this is, in fact, one step toward marriage. You don't need a certificate to do these things. You already can do them. You can already do all of the things that you're saying in this bill you want to do. I don't think you need a legal certificate. And as far as mentioning marriage in the bill, if you go to page 7, it says a person commits bigamy if being married and knowing that his spouse is alive, he marries again or enters into a domestic relationship. That tells me that they have to be, that it would have to be a marriage. If we're not honoring the marriage, then I don't see how that could be that way. The other thing is that it says again on the next line, or enter into a domestic relationship. So I think that we better be very cautious of this and know what we're doing when we vote. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Madam Chairman, just to the bringer of the bill, I just want to make sure that I haven't missed something with the copy of the bill that I have on page 3. On line 6, it says the term spouse shall be include a party in domestic partnership contract evidenced by the certificate. Has that been changed or is that still in the language? Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And the bringer of the bill can answer those questions in a second. I just want to talk on the economic impact and what's currently going on within the Fortune 500 companies across our country. 59% of Fortune 500 companies, as well as smaller companies in the state of Wyoming, already provide for domestic partnership benefits, such as health insurance. And to the previous speaker, a lot of these provisions are not already in place unless we pass this law. The university across the state, of which I am the most recent graduate in this body of that school, also provides for domestic partnership, such as health insurance. On the 100 firms for Fortune Magazine's Best Companies to Work For, they all have non-discrimination policies that include sexual orientation. So this is going on across the business world. I think this establishes us as the equality state that we are open for business and we promote business within our own state. And I'd be willing to answer any questions as well.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against this bill, the bill before you has been designed to seem a reasonable solution to the question of domestic partnerships for same-sex couples. But a further understanding of this bill will show that legislation such as this has been used repeatedly as gateway legislation leading to full marriage partnerships for same-sex couples. And the reason for that is because once a domestic partnership definition is in place, proponents of same-sex marriages are able to demonstrate a new second-class status now enshrined in statute, and then based upon due process and equal protection afforded in those laws. So the clear reality to such a bill as this is that it must be considered in the same light as a full same-sex marriage bill. And the truth is, we do not prohibit anyone from marrying in the same way that everyone else in this society is allowed to marry. Everyone is afforded the same rights in regards to the classic definition of marriage as understood throughout history. But what is being requested of us today with this bill is a new right. And here is how this discussion applies to this bill. And while we have been assured that this is no first step, we would be defining a new second-tier marriage status with this bill. This bill would then become a down payment on future lawsuits leading to full same-sex marriage. Only 3 months ago, after civil union legislation was passed into law in the Nutmeg State, and if you don't know where that is, just use Pig Latin for cut confetti. And there in that state, a lawsuit was filed demanding same-sex marriage. The lawsuit was claiming that to not issue marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples violated the Equal Protection and Due Process Clauses. Again, in the Granite State, they made the full transition already by means of this kind of gateway legislation. Friends, listen, in voting no on this bill, we are not denying love. We are not infringing on rights. We are ensuring that we do not create a new second-tier status of marriage, and we are preserving the understanding of marriage that we hold dear for future generations. So again, Madam Chairman, on and against this bill.
Representative Hutchinson.
Madam Chair, it's Hutchings.
Please say, accept my apology.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It usually happens all the time. I, too, look at this bill, and when I go over it carefully, the first thing that pops into my mind is this. Marriage by any other name is still marriage. When I review page 2, lines 2 through 15, it talks about multiple domestic partnerships, and it refers to statute 6-4-407. And when I look at 6-4-401, that's bigamy and penalties in the defense for bigamy. It gives the same punishment, the same penalties, the same fine. In the committee, it was spoken of that possibly two sisters could live together. So I don't know why we have this portion of the bill. It's a little confusing to me. Maybe I can get some clarification a little later. On page 3, lines 1 through 8, it seems like it's redefining the word spouse, which is defined as either member of a married pair in relation to the other one's husband or wife, and now it's going to include domestic partners. I think we have, on page 4, we go into a new part of the statute. Let's see if I can get the pages. Certificate sounds like a marriage certificate to me. Maybe we can get more clarification on that. When we go to page 6, lines 19 through 24, it talks about the legitimacy of children. And if we're talking about same-sex couples, I'm only going to assume that they're not able to have children. And then it's kind of, in this case, giving children legitimacy that they haven't had before. Not to say that that's a bad thing. Then we go to page 7, and it again talks about bigamy. And to me, you have to be married in order to commit bigamy. So, again, Marriage by any other name is still marriage, and hopefully I can get some clarification on these questions.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I, too, oppose this bill, and I oppose it for the fact that if you look on page one under the title page, it says providing for the recognition of foreign domestic partnerships. Now, if you turn to page three in the bill, it says domestic partnership is a civil contract between two natural persons to which the consent of the parties capable of contracting is essential. Yet on page eight, we go to foreign domestic partnerships. It says all domestic partnerships which are valid by the laws of the jurisdiction in which they are entered are valid in this state. That can trump this anything we have within our state, because if it's from a foreign country and it involves multiple people, how do we control that?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm against this bill. Some of the things that we've heard from those that are supporting this bill so far, quotes like typically reserved or invoking the same rights and privileges, or how about open for business? The fact of the matter is we would be open for business. Let me tell you some of the businesses that we'd be open for. It would increase health care costs. It would grow our government. We could also look at funeral homes. Let me give you some statistics, because we all know what this is about. We know this is about same-sex marriage and civil unions, no matter how it's sugar-coated. Just quickly, the median age of a homosexual man dying of AIDS is 39. The median age of a homosexual man dying of all other causes is 42. The median age of a lesbian death is 45. Only 1% of homosexuals die of old age. Less than 3% of all homosexuals are over the age of 55. Now, I'll spare you the details about the diseases and the statistics that are available. But the fact of the matter is this is something that's pushed on us to be politically correct. Let's be the equality state. The fact of the matter is, there are disastrous consequences to this bill, and we would be open for business.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Excuse me, Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm opposed to this, and I would just like to say that the definition of marriage was in 1876, and that's when we became known as the Equality State. And I think that's the way, you know, if we could state some statutes in our Constitution both ways, but I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrich.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just rose to speak because I was excited to speak on a bill that did not involve guns. Except I seem to have the gun-owning gays. I got that demographic all sewed up. they're in my camp. The part I like about this bill very much so is there is a provision there that allows for dissolution. And right now, that's what's gotten so confusing is someone in a same-sex relationship, their relationships are no different than our relationships. You enter into sometimes short-term relationships, sometimes long-term relationships, and sometimes, just like everyone else, sometimes your relationship doesn't work out. And when that happens, you need to go through a procedure to dissolve and distribute your property. And in many times, child custody is an issue. What this does is protect those interests, and it provides for an orderly process for the dissolution. If we were going to have this argument, probably should have been done 20 years ago when the state of Wyoming started to allow same-sex couples to adopt children. But we do that. We do quite a lot of it. If you actually come to my community and you come to my elementary school, you will see quite a few children that have same-sex parents. It's a very normal thing in my community. And sometimes those relationships end. And there has to be an orderly process for dealing with custody of children. The other part I would say is, it's hard to be against, you can be against this bill, but as the years go by, it's getting harder and harder to be against a bill like this as we have a face on same-sex marriage. As more and more of our friends and our family come out, it's hard to say no when that is your friend or that is your family member. And I would urge you to think of the faces of the people that you know that are in same-sex relationships and understand that they too deserve to have their rights and responsibilities defined in the law. And I would urge you to vote aye on the bill.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Carbon County representative presented a very a persuasive argument. As we grow older and we lose our partners and desire to continue a partnership without an economic penalty, which Social Security does provide, it sheds a little bit different light on the consideration of the measure. The objections that we see on page 3 perhaps can be addressed and amended on second reading or another time, perhaps. But as to a threat of marriage, I've looked around the room and concluded I probably enjoy about as long a marriage as anybody in the room. And I think the greatest threat to my marriage is my presence here.
Is there any other discussion? Are you ready for the question? Oh. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a couple of things to add to this. I'm obviously a supporter of this bill. I'm a co-sponsor. I was a co-sponsor of the other bill. And for me, it's just a simple matter of fairness and justice and constitutionality and my deep felt religious beliefs. As regards to the Constitution, you don't get to cherry pick. You don't get to cherry pick one reference to a responsibility to protect health and morality and overlay your particular brand of morality and ignore all of the other provisions for the equal political rights that all human beings are created equal, that there exists no arbitrary absolute power, not even in the largest majority. You don't get to cherry pick. You don't get to ignore those to just proclaim this one thing. And the same holds true for the Bible, quite frankly. You don't get to cherry pick a few things out of the Old Testament and maintain a right to deny someone else the opportunity for love in all of its facets. You know, the main tenet of Jesus was to love your neighbor as yourself. And I hold true to that. In regards to, so for those who say this is really, really about a biblical thing, and to my point about cherry picking, I have a few things to point out to you. Alongside of proclaiming a man sleeping with another man as a woman as an abomination. Here's a few other things that are abominations. And so I'm wondering why we're not facing these issues. So in that same section, you have, do not cut the hair at the sides of your head or clip the edges of your beard. That's an abomination. I'm wondering how many of you have been wearing beards or goatees or mustaches of late and whether you've considered that. To all of you ranchers out there, I bring to you Leviticus 19:19. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. Thou shalt not sow thy field with mingled seed. Neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come unto thee. So, I'm here to tell you that crossbreeding for hybrid vigor may be an abomination unto the Lord. I'm here to suggest that planting oats as a nurse crop with your alfalfa might qualify too. Wearing a good Pendleton wool vest with a silk lining. These are all things spoken about in the Old Testament in exactly the same way, in exactly the same section. So, taking that into consideration, for me, this is really about simple, common human decency and respect for fellow human beings. Love your neighbor as yourself. Honor the Constitution. Our founding fathers and mothers and their very wise foundation that they left for us. This is about fairness and justice for your siblings, for your relatives, your neighbors, your co-workers, your colleagues. And then let me tell you what this means in a very personal way. I have numerous friends, colleagues, relatives who are involved in relationships with members of the same sex. Some of them have been together for decades. Some of them are new. They come in all sizes and shapes. Most of the ones that I personally know are very dedicated to each other. One particular couple, elderly gentleman these days, been together for over 40 years. Wonderful human beings, good and decent in every sense of the word, have contributed much to their communities and their families. But here's the heartbreak. I just lost my husband, a man that I was married to. And I will tell you that because I was his wife, I was allowed to be there with him when he died. Everything transferred immediately to my name. I didn't have to produce paperwork or justify my presence throughout that process or have other relatives who have not been involved for the last 20 years. I didn't have to ask their permission before we decided whether we were going to go with a burial or a cremation. But when one of my elderly friends loses his mate, of all those many years, chances are high that they will. And that on top of the heartbreak of losing your mate, they're going to have to go through all kinds of contortions just to deal with that grief and those affairs. Now, in my mind, that's not right. That's not fair. That's not just in any way, shape, or form. And what this bill does is say to those that yes, they can. And yes, they will. And I ask you to support it.
Representative Baker.
Just briefly here. I hear talk about putting a face to this. Most of you aren't aware that my half-sister is a lesbian. And she's been in multiple same-sex marriages. So this isn't something that's I'm disassociated from. This is something that's personal to my life. So you can sit there and gawk at me like I'm just casting a stone from the outside. This is something that's involved in my family. Secondly, I just want to point out, I hear these constitutional arguments. Oh, it's unconstitutional. It's unfair. The Supreme Court has defined what a fundamental right is. It's something that's deeply rooted in tradition. Now, we're dealing with this over 250 years after our Constitution was founded. This isn't something that's deeply rooted in tradition. So to throw out the fact that it's unconstitutional to treat people like this, this isn't something that this country was founded on.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Oh. Excuse me, Representative Hutchings.
Thank you, ma'am. After listening to the testimony from my fellows, I really appreciate it. And when I think about some of the words such as, is this just, is it fair, and is it equal, I would like us all to just really reach down deep in our hearts and think about the consequences of our actions when we vote and decide, is this really, truly the right thing to do? And vote accordingly. Thank you, ma'am. On and against the bill.
Representative Wallace.
From the Constitution of the State of Wyoming, in their inherent right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, all human beings are equal. Since equality and enjoyment of natural and civil rights is only made sure through political equality, the laws of this state affecting the political rights and privileges of its citizens shall be, without distinction of race, color, sex, or any circumstance or condition whatsoever other than individual incompetency or unworthiness duly ascertained by a court of competent jurisdiction. How can it get any clearer than that? This does not say all human beings are equal and all human beings have equal political rights except for those who have the wrong partners. It doesn't say that. There are no exceptions. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As most of you know, I don't talk too much. So it's kind of unusual for me to get up on, you know, quite often or even twice and talk on one bill. Let me remind you, though, of what's been said to you. Let me also remind you that if we're so concerned about the Constitution, about the state of Wyoming, then let's put this on a ballot and let the people of Wyoming vote on it. She says we can't cherry pick. We cherry pick every day. Every day we vote on a bill. We cherry pick. So if we're so concerned about cherry-picking, about the Constitution of Wyoming, let the people decide. Why are you and I here? We're here to represent those people. We're here to say what they want us to say. And we do that through our own thoughts and ideas. So my suggestion, if you're going to vote for the bill, are you representing your constituents? If you're going to vote no for the bill, are you representing your constituents? If you have doubts, say no, let's put it on the ballot, and let the people of Wyoming decide what they want to do with this. Thank you.
Representative Piperian.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and like the previous speaker, I don't say too much, and I apologize for my words earlier. There's a lot of feelings on this matter on both sides of the aisle, or not so much the aisle, but we all hold our feelings regarding these issues. I'd like to stand and feel propelled to declare my opposition to this bill for many of the reasons heretofore given already. I've heard some words about a motto for Wyoming called Forever Wyoming. And I'd like us all to remember that as this vote goes forward, that we must remember that our decisions here on this bill and others will forever change the face of Wyomingans. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Speaker Pro Tem's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill 168 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division is required, although we've taken care of that. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart. Bird,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
no.
Coleman,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Davison,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
no.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
no.
Halverson,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey, Hunt,
no.
Hutchings,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparik,
no.
Kirkbride,
no.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
no.
Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
no.
Madden, McKim,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
no.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton, Petroff,
aye.
Piperinen,
no.
Reeder.
No.
Semlick.
No.
Summers.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, no. Madden. Madden, excused. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 25 aye, 34 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 168, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion carries. I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Hold on.
Oh, excuse me. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Madam Chairman, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, they believe report as follows. House Bill 216, recommended do pass. House Bill 103, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 104, amended and further amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 105, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 37, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 212, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 132, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 168, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Signed, Representative Campbell, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Yea, Representative. You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Yea, Representative. Excellent job, Representative Campbell, for your first time in the chair. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now hear reports from the Senate.
Madam Chairman, the bill listed below is message number 194. The bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 38, University of Wyoming Board of Trustees, ayes 25, noes 5. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 195. Madam Chairman, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 98, Motor Vehicle Lemon Law. Ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 196. Madam Chairman, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 117, confidentiality of domestic abuse victim information. Eyes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 197. Madam Chairman, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 137, Protection of Animals. Eyes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 198. Madam Chairman, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 99, Water and Sewer District Electors. Ayes 19, noes 11, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 199. Madam Chairman, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 162, Authorized Taking of an Eagle. Ayes 23, noes 7, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 200. Madam Chairman, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate Joint Resolution 1, Qualifications for University of Wyoming Trustee. Ayes 23, noes 7, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Madam Chairman, the bill listed below, Message 201, passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File number 114, Assault of Healthcare Providers. Ayes 16, noes 14, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 202, Madam Chairman, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File number 129, Motor Vehicle Accidents, Serious Bodily Injury. Ayes 8, noes 22. This bill has been indefinitely postponed. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 203, Madam Chairman, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File number 141, Unlawful Use of Toxic Substances. Ayes 7, noes 23. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from the standing committees.
Madam Chairman, the committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 176, School District - Natural Gas Fueling Facilities, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye. Representatives Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stevenson, Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 230, School Safety and Security, respectfully reports saying back to the House with the following recommendations. Pursuant to House Rule 4-8, that it do pass with the following amendments, and two, that it do pass should the recommended amendments not be adopted. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stevenson, and Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Madam Chairman, the committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 105, Engrossed School Capital Construction, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stevenson, and Wallace, signed by Representative Wallace, Vice Chairman. Madam Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 76, Engrossed Bighorn Sheep Location, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davidson, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Yagi, Crone, Piperinen, and excused was Representative Hutchings, signed by Representative Davidson, Chairman. Madam Speaker, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 205, Motor Vehicle Weight Restrictions, Exceptions, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagy, Laux, McKim, Reeder. Those who voted no, Representatives Blake and Dave Zwanenser, signed by Representative Dave Zwanenser, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Do you want to wait? We're going to go ahead and do committee announcements. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment for House Bill 91, Statewide Accountability Phase 1, House Bill 72, Statewide Accountability Phase 2, and House Bill 244, State Board of Education. And for those members that would like to grab something to eat, I would highly recommend it.
Oh, excuse me. How about I'll try our speaker, who looks like a really cute chipmunk at the moment. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. No root canal pulled the tooth. The budget basics training is rescheduled for noon Thursday, so 10 minutes after noon recess on Thursday is the second budget basics.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we could all go to the dentist and have that kind of a speech impediment. So, great. Chairman Zwanenser.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night, 10 minutes after adjournment, in H-17 to hear 5 bills. House Bill 189, repeal of Real ID. House Bill 235, firefighters' license plates. House Bill 232, highway speed limits. House Bill 239, highway speed limits 2. And House Bill 238, homemade trailer titles.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam. I lost my other committee announcement.
Chairman Harvey, you didn't even go to the dentist.
I know. It's brain numb. Okay, your committee number 10 will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment today in room H-17 to hear House Bills 102 and House Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons and House Bill 234, Home Energy Assistance. Tomorrow morning, we are going to double back and hear in H-17 at 8 a.m. House Bill 224 and House Bill 183.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 9 will meet tomorrow morning, or Friday morning at 8 o'clock, to consider House Bill 221, State Government Fraud Reduction Act Reporting Requirements, House Bill 58, Community Infrastructure Programs Amendment 2, Atomic Energy Agreement State Study, House Bill 217, and if time allows, House Bill 140, Environmental Quality Act Permits Intervention. And if I may, Madam Chairman, reminder that we will have our prayer breakfast on Thursday morning at 7:30. Well, we'll start at 6:30, but we'll start to be there and active by 6:45 and out in time to go to work on Thursday.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, Thursday, January 31st, at 8 a.m. in room H-11 to hear the following bills: House Bill 207, Neglected and Abandoned Animals Grant Program; House Bill 225, Transfer of Ownership of Livestock and Brands; and House Bill 228, Transfer of Federal Lands Study. Thank you.
Chairman Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 8 o'clock Friday morning, and we'll discuss Senate File 33, Search and Rescue Program Donations, Senate File Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet on noon recess
following bills in this order: House Bill 249, Budget Reduction Implementation; House Bill 250, Public Employee Retirement Plans; House Bill 245, State Parks Peace Officer Retirement; House Bill 248, State Building Commission Staffing; House Bill 255, Year-Round School Calendar Incentive; and Senate File 47, and Gross School Finance Amendments. If we run out of time during noon recess, Madam Chair, we will continue the meeting upon adjournment. And just to announce again, if the good speaker announced, just to be clear, that the budget basics training for all newly elected members and any other interested members was originally scheduled for tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., but has been moved to noon recess tomorrow, and that is in B63 of the Herschler Building, the basement of the Herschler. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Vice Chairman Blickery.
Madam Speaker Pro Tem, your committee number 7 gets to meet twice tomorrow at 8 a.m. in room H18 to continue House Bill 187, Campaign Finance, and then move to House Bill 206, Exemption Water Utilities, House Bill 219, Campaign Finance Reporting, and House Bill 129, Voting Rights. Then, upon noon recess, your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet in room H18 to discuss House Bill 181, House Bill 218, House Bill 246, and House Bill 259. Thank you.
Thank you. And would the honorary Representative Stan Blake come and help lead us in Cowboy Joe, since the Cowboys are playing tonight? Thank you, Representative Blake. Thank you, and good luck, Cowboys. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Speaker Pro Tem, general file for tomorrow. House Bill 216, 103. Whoa, we did that, didn't we? How far did we get? Whoa, let's not do that again. Where am I? Have you got my list? Oh, yeah. Good. Let's do that again.
Yeah, let's try a new list, Mr. Majority.
Better file for tomorrow. House Bill 166, 126, 134, 99, 109, 46, 215, 77, 229, 176, 205, House Joint Resolution 2, 96, 45, 145, and 230. Is that what that is? 230. And such other bills as are reported in from committee. We're going to go hard. We're going to go long tomorrow. You might want to bring an extra set of underwear. We're going to knock this thing out. With that, Madam Speaker Pro Tem, I move the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, January 31, 2013.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We'll see you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.